like any introduction, but not to fight.
I did the dishes last night.
That is really good.
I'd like to, first of all, thank Mrs. Zucker for giving me the opportunity to address a very distinguished, very special gathering. On my way out of my house, my son said, where are you going? So I said, I'm going to speak about Lashon Hara. He said, 45 minutes, who are you going to talk about? So, I also have to tell you that I'm a little uncomfortable. You know, they say that Rav Chatzka Levenstein, Zecher Tzadik Livracha, Biruchim, when they used to speak about any topic, so they wouldn't speak about it until they felt that they mastered it, until they really, you know, had a, you know, they would work on it before they would talk about something. They would spend days and weeks and, you know, until when they gave the shmooze, it was the word mashpia means to overflow. That's what a mashpia is, and they would literally overflow from them, from their own growth. I'm like a little bit the opposite, you know, coming from the opposite perspective. I do not feel that I am worthy to speak about Shmiras HaLoshon. I don't feel like I have good control. But maybe B'schus HaTzibur, hopefully, and I don't think I'm going to say anything that are major chidushim, but as Chazal say, in Mizarzen El Mizurazen, you only give chizuk to those who are already mechuzak. So hopefully, Be'ezer Hashem. So there's Siyata Dishmaya. Whenever a person prepares, whenever you have to give something this morning, I try to learn a few minutes of Nefesh HaChaim from Chaim V'Loshon every morning. And this is what I came to this morning. He's talking about the effect that we have in this world, the effect that we have on everything just from in this world. He says like this, we do a little bit of the Lashon. Hizr Khan, Esa Adam, he warns a person over here, that a person is in this lowly world, he doesn't see. In a roe, umasig, habinyan, arisa, he doesn't see, a person doesn't realize, a person can't, you know, we only, there's an old joke that I heard years ago, if it's appropriate for this, not appropriate, but for this olam, but gets the point across about a teacher is teaching takes her students out for a field trip. She's showing them about nature, and she says, "You all see the flowers?" They say, "Yes." And I say, "Oh, that means that the flowers exist." You know, she says, "You see all the trees?" And they say, "Oh, that means that the trees exist." And one little kid's a little fed up with this whole nonsense. He says, "Anybody see the teacher's brain?" They say, "No." He said, "That means it doesn't exist." So it wasn't in my class. The Nefesh HaChaim is saying that we don't realize, we don't see. We only know what we can see in front of us. But we know already in our day and age that even things that we don't see have a tremendous koach. And the Chofetz Chaim said that's why one of the reasons that HaKadosh Baruch Hu gave us videos and tape recorders in his time, he said, because, you know, when the Mishnah says that there's an ayin roev, ozen shemas, there's an eye that sees, there's an ear that hears, so I'm old, I used to believe it. That's what it is. So today we got a little skeptical. How can that be? Everything I say is listened to, is recorded. So Chofetz Chaim said HaKadosh Baruch Hu brought into the world tape recorders and video cameras, and all of a sudden you see in front of you, this is what it is. It's a videotape recording that's going to be played back. So we have an idea about this, but the Nefesh HaChaim says that Mikol Dibur V'Dibur Shilo, we don't understand what it accomplishes in the upper world. This is in the Shara Aleph Perek Yud Gimel, and called Menechshav Dibur V'Sicha Kala. What, just like when a person takes a hammer, you know, and builds something or breaks something, you see it in front of you. He said every word, what it does in the upper world. Of a Yedane Amona, a person should know faithfully, she called Dibur V'Sicha Kalashol, every word, every little chatter that a person says, Acholashi is Vate V'Svasa, everything he expresses with his lips, Lo Isav, it's never lost. It does something, it accomplishes something, and it remains. And he quotes a whole bunch of Mamorim in the Zohar. I'll just read one or two of them. Kol Milo, Milo Shadam, Motzim Yipiv, any word that comes out of a person's mouth, Olu Lamala goes up, it ascends, Ubokas Rikim, and it breaks through the heavens, and this is for good or for bad. I feel hevel peh, even a person's words, makom mamad yeshlo, it has a place, etc., etc. He continues all these different mamorim, and it was just amazing. This is what I came across this morning when I was preparing in my office, in my Beis HaChinuch office. I have a sign hanging there. I heard this line once. I don't remember where I saw it originally, but it's a great line, and it says, "Hurt people, hurt people." And the first line, it says with a capital H and a capital P, and the second one is the lowercase. so it's a good conversation maker. You know, sometimes boys will come in, what does that mean? You wrote the same thing twice. So explain to them, you know, hurt people means that people who are hurt, people who feel hurt themselves, hurt people. Those are the people that hurt other people. So I tell them there's two nekudas over there. There's two important points. One is that if somebody hurts my feelings, if I really have a healthy sense of self-esteem and healthy emotional health, then my first thought is not, why is he saying that about me? I really, it's true, and, you know, you get upset about it. But my first thought is, what's the matter with him or her that they have to say that to me? What's missing? What's the deficiency in their life that they feel like they have to knock me? But I said, I always tell them the second thing is that if I say something about somebody else, if I hurt someone else's feelings, I need to stop and think to myself, what's with me? Sometimes we know, but sometimes we're not, you know, I wouldn't have thought about that, but there's obviously something bothering me. You know, when we're at a simcha that we're making, you know, Be'ez Hashem, so on wonderful occasions. So we won't say negative comments about other people. Not only because we're so busy and worrying about other things, because I'm so happy that everything is going so well. I don't feel a need to knock anybody else. But when things are not always, you know, so good, or, you know, for example, I heard Rebbe once say this. You know, people go to a wedding, an upscale wedding, you know, very wealthy people, Baruch Hashem, and they make a tremendous chasson. And people sit there sometimes, and they'll say, you know, could have given the money elsewhere. Could have given the money to somewhere else. Look at all the mosdos haTorah. Look at all the organizations that could have used the money better. Maybe they're right, you know, very possibly. But what's the real impetus behind most people why they're saying that? Is it really hurts them that the other person used the money for this and not for a mosdos? Alavai, maybe. But probably most of us, it comes from a little bit of a jealousy, if we're really honest. Really jealous of it. I always joke about it. You know, when people say about somebody, oh, they made they used their money, the wealthy, you know, they used their money for this, for that, you should see what, but the big ball is stuck. Because it comes from that feeling of guilt that I just spoke Lashon Hara, so we always cover it. We assuage our, hey, big ball, like, don't get me wrong, wonderful people, very special people. You know, but the bullet was there, the Lashon Hara was there. So, you know, more often than not, I'm talking about the roots of Lashon Hara, because the emes is that, it's something, you know, something called the Band-Aid syndrome. That, you know, every kid, if you have young children, you know that the cure to the panacea, the cure to everything is a Band-Aid. You know, we used to joke about that, we used to make fun. You know, you go to the nurse, you have a stomachache, Band-Aid. Everything's a Band-Aid. Because that's the cure for everything.
And crackers.
And crackers, okay. When we moved into our home a few years ago, so there was one of the sinks was corroded, you know, in inside of it. I came home, like, the day after we moved in, I come home from work, and I see on the part that's corroded, a Snoopy Band-Aid across it. Fixes everything, you know, it helps everything. But as we all know, it doesn't cure anything. The Band-Aid is just there to cover up the problem, maybe to keep it from infections getting inside. I'm scared to talk in front of a nurse, but the bottom line is, the real cure comes from, you know, the body heals itself, or the medicine that a person takes. So sometimes we look at, I think of Matis Yo Salomon, Shalita said that, you know, we can't just work on Lashon Hara. You have to go to the source, what's behind it. Why? What causes us to speak Lashon Hara? And the more we understand that, the better we understand what drives us. And it's true for everything, but especially something so as encompassing and as important as Lashon Hara. Really, if we understand what causes it, we have a better hope of overcoming it. So a lot of the times it comes from a feeling of jealousy, or comes from a feeling of inferiority, as we mentioned. We know that Lashon Hara is very inextricably bound with Sinas Chinam. We know that the second Beis HaMikdash, the Golus that we're still in, is Ne'avon Sinas Chinam. It's a scary thing. If you stop and you think about it, it really is very scary. You know, that the first Beis HaMikdash was destroyed because of Gimel Avonos Chamuros, the three most stringent and the worst Averos. And the second Beis HaMikdash was destroyed because of an Adam L'Chavero, because of Sinas Chinam. It's a frightening concept. You know, the first Beis HaMikdash was brought down because of an Adam L'Mokom, the second Beis HaMikdash was brought down because of an Adam L'Chavero. But I've always, it used to bother me, I used to wonder about it, you know, about the Lashon, Meshehoisibo Sinas Chinam, because there was baseless, Chinam means for nothing, there was hatred for nothing. And if you ask anybody that really has a disagreement with someone else, they'll tell you, this is not for nothing. There's a very good reason why I don't like that person. You know, so what does that mean? What's the lashon of sinas chinam? I don't understand. What does that mean? Everybody, who hates somebody for nothing? Who just blatantly hates someone? So the Chofetz Chaim has three approaches. All of them are very important insights into this question. What is the lashon of sinas chinam? So Chofetz Chaim first writes that a few different approaches, and again, getting to the underpinnings of what causes lashon hara, why we speak lashon hara. So Chofetz Chaim says, number one, we speak lashon hara about others because we fail to realize their greatness, who somebody is. We wouldn't speak lashon hara about someone who we really held in extremely high esteem, someone we really felt was a chush of a person. We wouldn't speak badly about them, but we don't, you know, I don't think he's such a good person or she's such a good person when I say something. But the Torah says the Chofetz Chaim, that I'm kedoshim, v'yisim kedoshim, that we're holy people, that every Jew is holy, every Jew is precious, every Jew is a ben yachid to Hashem, or a bas yachid to Hashem. So that means everybody is special, everybody is held on a high level. If we think about that, so the first explanation the Chofetz Chaim says is sinas chinam, it's a sinner because there's a feeling of chinam, that I feel the other person is chinam. The other person is low down, they're nothing. They're not worthy enough. That doesn't mean I feel like they're nothing at all, but not enough to feed my dregasim. We know that the period of Avelus, which we find ourselves in, some people finished it already, but the period of Avelus of this time of the year, it's an unbelievable concept. But this period of time of the year is really should have been Osman Simcha. It's in Pesach and Shavuos. The Ramban says it's a whole elongated Chol HaShamoed, like a whole long Chol HaMoed connecting Pesach and Shavuos, which always leads kids to wonder, so then how come we're not going on trips every day? That's not the idea of the Chol HaMoed. It's the connection between Pesach and Shavuos. And it transformed into a time of Avelus. Because we know Talmidei Rabbi Akiva, Shalanago Kovet Zebzeh. They didn't treat each other with adequate respect. We can imagine, we could be sure that Talmidei Rabbi Akiva treated each other with respect. But it wasn't Kifi Madrigasa. It wasn't enough that what Rabbi Akiva's standards for his Talmidei. Which is a frightening concept. So the chinam means the sinas chinam, the hatred of chinam, because you think the other person is chinam, which means you don't think enough of the other person, or we don't think enough of each other. You know, somebody does something wrong, but if I really think that they're such a great person, I wouldn't talk badly about them. That's his first idea. The second idea, which Chofetz Chaim did not say this, but I'll introduce with this, that President Lincoln, who was an unbelievable people person, understanding. I once saw in a sefer, it was a sefer called Simcha V'Tuv Levav. It's all about Simcha. And I think the only English sentence in the sefer was, it said, Avram Lincoln, which is, by the way, it's hysterical. If anyone's been in Eretz Israel, you know there's a Rehov Lincoln, because it's in Israel they translate everything based on the English. And since we spell it with a silent L, really it's called Rehov Lincoln in Yerushalayim. But anyway, so it says, Avram Lincoln, and it says Nisi Artzos Abris HaYomer, and this line is in English: people are as happy as they tend to make themselves be. Basically, that's the line. A person is as happy as he makes themselves. You know, a person has control over their own happiness. A person who works on happiness, you know, can bring themselves to happiness. And it says in the sefer, the Mechaber writes, I said this to a Shiva or a Chash of a Hid, and Naneas Rosha, he shook his head and he said, Ochein Lincoln HaYachachon Gadol. Lincoln was a wise man. So Lincoln, you know, he had a lot of enemies, you know, people who didn't listen to him and didn't get along with, and he worked very hard to make his enemies and to befriend his enemies, to you know, draw them close to him. And someone once asked him, why don't you're the president, you know, get rid of these people. So he said, you know, why don't you get rid of your enemies? So he said, if I make my enemies into my friends, am I not getting rid of my enemies? It's a much higher road to take than if a person has that option. We don't, and the rule is we don't hate those who we love. People we love, we don't hate. So a lot of times lashon hara is because there is chinam between us. There is no relationship between us. There is not enough of a connection. We know sometimes, you know, you have this experience where you think badly about somebody, you say something bad about somebody, and then you get to know them better, and sometime later you think back to when you didn't know them so well, and you said those things, or someone else said those things, and you feel bad about it. Because at the time, I didn't have a relationship with them. So the second thing the Chofetz Chaim says is sinas chinam, the sinah comes from not enough of a feeling of connection, not enough of a relationship between people. Again, these are all, each one of these can fit into different, you know, there's not one, I guess, one root cause of lashon hara. But all of these can fit into different situations. The reason I'm saying that is because we, I shouldn't say we, people, those who work on not speaking Lashon Hara probably don't, but people often speak Lashon Hara about those they do feel close with. Sometimes those are the most we speak Lashon Hara, but sometimes it's because there's not enough of a connection between people. And the third idea is perhaps the most powerful of all. And Rav Matzio Solomon said this over with the following mashal. He said there was a teacher who was trying to teach the class, and he noticed that one of the students was playing with a pencil and making a significant disturbance. It was really disturbing the class. Again, not in my class. The teacher warned the student, please put it away. Doing it again. Warns again, please put it away. Not putting it away. The teacher walks over to the student, takes his hand that was playing with the pencil, bends it behind his back, and proceeds to pull it all the way up until it breaks. Yeah, I don't say anything about it in front of a nurse, but breaks his hand. And the next day, the parents come in irate, as you can imagine. What in the world is wrong with you? What's wrong with you? And you broke our son's hand for no reason. The teacher says, for no reason? I was trying to teach a class. I spent many hours preparing that class. It wasn't for no reason. He was disturbing the class. The parents said, you idiot, that's for no reason. You know, yes, there might have been a reason, but compared to the consequence, compared to what you did, that's not enough of a reason. That's nothing. That's not a reason. You know, if to break somebody's hand. Says the Chofetz Chaim, sinas chinam. If we realize the power, the detrimental power, and how dangerous it is that we have when there's disunity in Klal Yisrael, when we don't get along with each other, he says, I don't care what the reason is. It's chinam. It's not worth it. It's just not worth it. That's the main nekuza. Those are the three ideas that the Chofetz Chaim said. Number one, sinas chinam, you feel like the other person is nothing. You're not machshav the person enough. Number two, there is not enough of a relationship between us. There's chinam between us. And number three, compared to the detriment of what Lashon Hara will cause, it's chinam. It's nothing. It's just not worth it. There's an incredible story. Perhaps you've heard it. Yitzchak Zilberstein tells over about the power of avastinum, the power of peace and unity in protecting us from danger. There were two women who were involved in a personal feud, whatever the reason was, for many, many years. And one day one of the women went to a lecture about something, Mashu Kazeh, and she was inspired, and she said, you know what, I have to make amends, we have to fix things, you can't have this machlokas, it's terrible. She went to her former rival, and she told her, Harata, I feel terrible, I want to make shalom. And she said, it's very important, it's so important to me, you know, that we build a relationship. I want you to come to my daughter's wedding. I'm making a chasm soon, and you must come. So the second woman was very excited. She said, when's the chasm? She said, oh, it's on Tuesday, whatever. She said, oh, I wish I could come. Actually, it was a Thursday. She said, I can't come. I have surgery that day. So the first woman was so steadfast about having this other, her former rival, making shalom and making it in a complete way. She went to a rav. First, she asked her husband, I guess, she went to a rav, and they went to ask a shiloh. She can push off the wedding so that her friend could be there. And the psak that they got, that it was mutter, and it was, you know, harizem meshuvach. Beautiful thing to do. Wonderful. If it works out for everybody, the machatanim agree, and everybody can do it, wonderful. And the first woman was indeed able to arrange it, and the second woman came to the chasana. The original date and location of the wedding was the Versailles Wedding Hall in Yerushalayim on Thursday, May 24th, 2001, which was the exact time and place of the, if you remember, the infamous wedding disaster when the third floor of the four-story building collapsed, killing 23 people and injuring 80. Chmona Litzlan. And the story in no way takes away from the tragedy of those of the Chasan and Kala who were there and all the people who were hurt. But for at least this Chasan and Kala, it's incredible that the Koach of Shalom, because they were willing to, she wanted to make Shalom, and she was to go to such an extent, the Shmira that it had. That's a wild story. And Parshas Tazria Metzorah, so that's where the Torah really talks about Saras. So Shmuel Birnbaum, Zechut Tzadik Livracha, in the Sefer Bekori Shemo, he asks a very interesting question. First, he has an interesting premise. And he says that if you look at Saras, He says, you would think that any time a person speaks Lashon Hara, they would contract Tzaraas. We know that the reason there's no Tzaraas today is not because we're on such a high level, but really the opposite. But he says that really, he says, we don't find so many instances of Tzaraas in Tanakh. Or anywhere, even the Mori Chazal, you don't find so many instances. You find Gechazi, the famous Haftorah of Parshas Mitzorah, but you don't find so many instances. So Reb Shmuel Burnham says, this is his premise, he says that it's really not after one time. Lashon Hara doesn't come after a person speaks Lashon Hara one time. It really comes when a person is starting to get into it, and he or she is not being careful enough with Lashon Hara. And he says, V'koach cheto holich v'godol kolkach. In the koach of his sin, it's becoming more of a habit. He says, until finally it manifests itself externally. We know that first it would appear on a person's house, then on a person's clothing, then on a person's body. But he says it comes to such a level where it doesn't happen right away. One time a person slips, it really would come after that, which to me was a chiddush. But that's what Shmuel says. So he wants to know why that is. Maybe it would make sense if one time a person speaks Lashon Hara, they would get Tzaraas, and right away they would get the message, and they wouldn't speak so quickly again. So he has two mahalchim. I want to share with you the second one. He says, if you would ask a person, he starts like this. It's Eliyahu Hanavi, famous showdown, as it were, between the Malachi, the Nevi Habal, and Eliyahu Hanavi, where the Jews, Klal Yisrael, who were vacillating in between. You had the Nevi Habal who performed miracles, and Eliyahu Hanavi finally says to the people, he says, we're going to have on Har Carmel, we're going to have a showdown over here. And it's a whole story that the Navi tells over about how they came up there, and Eliyahu told them to take a bull, and he'll take a bull, and they did everything in their power to make their carbon look like it was legit, and it became very clear. But Eliyahu Hanavi says to the people, Ad Masei Atem Poschim Al Shtei HaSeifim. How long will you go in between the two? You'll go back and forth. Pick one. If you're going to go with Hashem, then go with Hashem. If you're going to go with the Baal, then go with the Baal. Which, at first glance, is a pella. I mean, like, at least they're going with Hashem also. Like, what is Eliyahu Hanavi telling them? He's telling them, just go wholeheartedly. Just go to Baal. Don't be in between. Wouldn't it be better to at least be in between? What's the pshat? That's his question. So he says, if you would ask a Jew at that time, do you believe in Baal? Do you worship Baal? They did. They worshiped Baal. I'm an Erlich guy. And he considered himself an Erlich person. I'm not like that. He says, so Shmuel says, Aval Adam hu rak Adam. A person is a person. And sometimes a person is nichshol a little bit. A person makes a mistake. A person stumbles. He says another example. He says, Yiv Shiva Bach, who oversleeps, you know, Shachris very frequently. He doesn't get up for Shachris. So he says, if you would ask him, and he comes late to daven, If you would ask him one day, and you'd say, how can you be mezalzel in tefillah? How can you cheapen your davening? You oversleep, you walk in late. I'd say, mezalzel tefillah, chas v'sholom. I'm a person. I was learning. Yeah, it's hard for me to get up. I'm not mezalzel tefillah. He says, until you back him against the wall and you show him, look, every day you're coming late. You're missing Pesuka de Zimra. You know how important that is? You're missing whatever. Until he finally says, taka, I'm being mezalzel. But a person doesn't see, a person doesn't see it at first. We all slip up a little bit. It's not really, no, not so bad. In a certain sense, it's worse when a person doesn't see clearly where their mishaps are. What was the damage that was done by Adam and Chava when they ate from the Eitz Hadas Tov V'Ra? Now, everything is befuddled. It's not clear. The lines are blurred. What's good and what's bad? Before, bad was external, good was internal. When Adam ingested from the Enchava, when they ingested from the Eitz Hadas, whatever the fruit was, when they ingested it, so the Sfarim say that they brought the Ra, Koach of Ra, inside. Whereas the Eitz Hara until then said, you want to do this. You want to do this, Avera. Once it went inside of him, now the Eitz Hara spoke from within and said, I want to do this. And we think, many times, that voice within us, which is the Eitz Hara, which Be'emes, the Sfarim will say, is not part of us, but we think it is, because it speaks in first person. I want to do this. I want to go here. I want to speak Lashon Hara. I want to do this. So, the Shmuel Baram says, but a person doesn't see it at first. He said, on Har Carmel, when the Jews, we don't serve Baal. We're Erlich Yidden. So Eliyahu finally says to them, here, look. Look where you're holding. pick one. Because at least if you serve Baal, you'll understand that you're over there for the Zara and you need to do tshuva. But as long as you're in between this vacillating path, you don't see where your mistake is. You don't see where you've gone wrong. And you'll never do tshuva. And it says that on Yom Kippur, that Al-Chet Shechatanu Fanecha B'Zadinu V'Shkaga. For the sins that we did on purpose and by mistake. So we would think that the ones by mistake, you know, that's not so bad. But some say that it's really the opposite. The ones that we did on purpose, we know we have to do tshuva for that. We know we have to fix those. The ones that we did by mistake, okay, it was my fault, you know, okay, I could have been more careful. In a sense, those are the ones that really the tshuva is not complete because we don't fully devote ourselves to. So Shmuel says, a person speaks Lashon Hara. So he thinks in his mind, what did I do already? I didn't mean it. But it's what happens with Miriam. Miriam, and that's one of the prototypes of Lashon Hara, Parshas Baaloscha. Miriam speaks about Moshe, her brother. Miriam speaks about Moshe in a caring way. She loves him. She didn't mean his Lashon Hara. Moshe wasn't machbid. He could care less. The Pasuk says, Moshe, anav mikol adam. He was the humblest person in the world. It was totally, didn't matter to him. And yet the Torah says, that's Lashon Hara. That is Lashon Hara. So the person says, what did I do already? I didn't mean it. I didn't say anything so bad. So if after one time you give Musr to a person for speaking Lashon Hara, and apparently Mishmo is saying, even if he got Tzaras, he would say, it's not Tzaras. I'm not one of those. I don't speak Lashon Hara. When a person is in it, they don't realize it. Until it happens enough times and a person's really slipping up, then you say to the person, look what you're doing, look how much you're attached to Lashon Hara. It's become a habit. You speak without even thinking. Another pshat that I once heard, for sins that we did with the Yetzer Hara. I once heard, Baal Musar said, it's a very cute word, he said, the chatoim that we did, what do you mean with the Yetzer Hara? Every affair we do is because of the Yetzer Hara. So he says, those averus that we do because become so habituated, they become such a part of us that we don't even think about it. He says, we're stealing from the Yitzhara because he can't even do his job because we've done it for him. He doesn't even have to convince us to speak Lashon Hara because it's at the tip of our tongue. He doesn't have to convince us to not be makbid on this or that, whatever averu it is, because we've become so used to it that the Yitzhara doesn't even have to step in. We do it automatically. So we're stealing from him. We're taking away his job, so we have to do tshuva for that. But that's what Shmuel is saying, that the Lashon Hara, that Tzaras, would come right away. A person wouldn't be tofes. A person wouldn't take the message to heart. But when a person does it over and over, then you could turn to him and say, hey, look where you are, look where you're holding. And that's when a person would really get the message. But there was a profound thought about Tzaras, about the idea that it's when we delude ourselves. We don't want to be makir the truth when we speak Lashon Hara. It's not really Lashon Hara. We have a lot of terutzim. But the concept of machzom lefi, which this very special group is about. So I heard a story once from Chaim Waxman. He said a number of years ago, I guess, that Waxman was in Miami. He was helping his father. His father was sick. Not sure who he's holding now, but this was a while ago. So one morning he accompanied his father to a shul in Miami, basically everybody in the shul was older, was retired, except there was one young man who noticeably stuck out. After davening ended, the young man, who quite obviously recognized Rabbi Waxman, approached him and asked him if he could give his wife some chizuk. And they walked to the entrance of the shul, and there was a young woman sitting there in a wheelchair. Obviously it was his wife. And she obviously had some very serious health issues. So Rabbi Waxman was uncomfortable trying to give her chizuk in front of his father. He took down the number. He said, I'll call you later. So later that day, Rabbi Waxman went to meet them. And the woman told him that despite how young she was, she had suffered a stroke, Rahmanu Islam. And she said the chances of such a thing happening were like 1 in 100,000 or something. And a couple hundred thousand. And she was paralyzed on one side of her body, and she could not speak at all. The doctors told her that with a tremendous amount of therapy, over time she can regain most of her faculties. The last one is speech. If it comes back, probably not. So a group of her close friends decided to undertake a machzom lefi for her, you know, in her schus. And they were going to speak no Lashon Hara for a few hours every day, you know. She said on the day the machzom lefi ended, a half hour after the allotted time, that they finished the Machzor Mufi, she regained complete usage of speech. Complete usage of speech. And she told Rabbi Waxman in perfectly unslurred speech that she is in constant contact with people who suffer similar conditions, and she can testify that speech is always the last thing to return. But by her, after this Machzor Mufi, doesn't always work that way, you know, with, you know, sometimes there's other cheshbonos in Shemayim, but it's unbelievable that that there was such a schus with this woman. But there's really a second part to Dibur. You can't really talk about only focusing on the negative, because that's only half of it. I'll introduce it by saying that, Baruch Hashem, this week we started work on our kitchen, in our home. And Sunday we sat there schlepping boxes down and, you know, clearing out the kitchen. And we've never made Pesach yet at home, so we're making Pesach now. Everything in the basement, everything's set up in the microwaves. And it's, except usually Pesach time, they don't start demolishing everything, but some people do. But I came home Monday night, and it was gone. It was unbelievable. It was a demolition crew. They came, you know, 9 o'clock in the morning, and it was gone. Our kitchen, we're there 5 years, but the house is there 25 years. But it's amazing how quickly to demolish is so quick. Be'ezer Hashem, Shvach will help in a few weeks. It'll be done, but it takes a lot more time to build. You know, to destroy is so much easier, and the dust that comes out of it. And I said it to my wife as I was leaving. She said, you can make a mussar out of everything. But a lot of dust going around. But it's true. When the person speaks, when we say the wrong things, there's a lot of dust that goes around. It's not just the dibur. It's a scary thought. You know, one of my rabbis said that today in our age, you know, we're very afraid, Hashem Yishmoreinu, but we're very afraid of nuclear weapons. He said there's nuclear lashon hara these days, with the blogs, and it's so quick and it's so easy, and we know. Nefesh HaChaim says that no dibur is ever forgotten about. It makes a roshim in Shemayim. But now we have dibur that makes a roshim in this world. And a person can do tshuva, but you can't take those words back, always. And these words, and sometimes the things that go around that people write, it's very frightening. But to talk about the positive as well, when Metzora finally healed, when he came to the end of his process, so he comes to the Beis HaMikdash, he has to bring carbon, he has to bring two birds, shtei tziporo chayos. And the Torah says that one of the tziporim, one of the birds was shechted, like a gun of all birds, and the other one was set free. The first one, the part of the blood was sprinkled on the Mizbeach, and the rest of the blood went on the Mitzorah himself, and the other bird was dipped in the blood and set free in the open field. So, what's the purpose of that? What do you need that second bird for? It's a strange thing. You take a second bird and then you let it go. What's the point? You have the first bird, you shecht it. That was what was necessary. The Apirion, which is a parish on Chumash written by the Mechaber of the Kitzer Shulchan Aruch, Shlomo Gansri, says, quotes a Gemara in Chulin. The Gemara says as follows, Om Rav Yitzchak, Mai Dixiv Ha'umnum Eilem, Ha'umnum Eilem Tzedeki Daberun. He says, indeed silence, speak righteousness. That's what the point. Indeed silence, Ha'umnum Eilem, Eilem, you're going to be quiet, Tzedek to Daber. So the Gemara says, Gemara in Chulin, Ma'um Nosu Shal Odom Ba'um Hazeh. What is the umness? Umness means a trade, a job. What is the umness of a person in this world? Yosem atzmo ki ilim, he, she should make themselves like a mute, not to talk. So verses yochol aflo divrei Torah. Maybe you'll think even in Torah a person shouldn't talk. Talmud lomer tzedek tidaber, you should speak righteousness. Ramban says, what's the purpose of a korban? What's the purpose of the korban? It's a famous one of the Ramban's famous attacks on the Rambam. The Rambam has his mahalik, but the Ramban says that the korban was meant to be an emotional experience. A person does an aver, b'shogeg. That's when the korban was brought. And he comes to the, and he has to go to the store and buy himself, you know, let's say it's a sheep. And he has to schlep the sheep from wherever he buys it all the way up to Yerushalayim, to the Beis HaMikdash. And you're taking care of the sheep for a few days. You have a little bit of attachment to it. You're feeding it, making sure it has what it needs. And it comes into the Beis HaMikdash, and you give it to the Kohen. You hand it over to the Kohen. The Kohen's set. You do smicha. You lean your hands on it. And the Kohen takes out a knife. The truth is, the owner could also do it. And all of a sudden, shechts it. And all of a sudden, they're catching the blood. And they're taking the blood and sprinkling it on the Mizbeach. And the owner is standing there, says the Ramban. And he's thinking to himself, give out. What did the sheep do wrong? The sheep didn't do anything wrong. That should be me. I'm the one who was careless. I'm the one who wasn't careful enough in my Avodas Hashem, on my Shmir Shabbos, or whatever it was. So it's an emotional experience. The person walks away thinking, I have to be more careful. I have to up my Avodas Hashem a little bit. I have to, you know, my learning of the halachos and everything. So it's an emotional experience. Korbanos is, obviously we do it first and foremost and last most, we do it because HaKadosh Baruch Hu commanded, because that's what the Torah says. But there's an emotional component also. It's an emotional experience. So when the Metzorah brings the two birds, if he only brought one bird, and he only brought that one bird and it was shechted, the message it would sound like is, Dibur bad. Mr. Metzorah, you shouldn't be talking so much. I saw once a plate. It was a picture of a fish with the hook in its mouth. And the line was, on the caption on the bottom was, if I kept my mouth shut, I wouldn't be here. So, the Metzorah, the message, if there was only one bird, the message would be, keep your mouth shut. You know, don't talk. But that's wrong. That's not true. There is another component. Negative speech is very dangerous and very damaging, very detrimental. It can destroy lives, can rip up relationships. But when used properly, there's nothing greater. That's our greatest weapon. Is our mouths, to give chizik to others. Words spoken with compassion, with empathy, with understanding, with love, we offer encouragement, advice, the expression of our deepest feelings. That's what defines Adam. Nasa Adam will make a person. So the famous words that Onkelos says, l'ruach memalala, to be someone who can speak. That's our godless. That's what one of the things that defines us. So we have to bring a second bird. The first one they shecht. The shechted to show the damage of speaking Lashon Hara, and the second one they set free, to fly away. And the message to the Metzorah is, don't take the message from here that I have to be quiet and never talk again, I have to learn how to be a quiet person. You know, the idea is, Achayim Hamavis Bi'ara Lashon, in the mouth, in the power of the mouth, there is the power of Chayim also, the power to live, to give life. One bird was led off to slaughter, and the other one was set free. It's a very, very powerful idea. And just to add to that, one more nekuda, that on this point that the Gemara calls it an umnis, a trait. So, Avram Erlinger, the Birchas Avram, says the Gemara Kedushin details a list of things that a father, of obligations that a father has to teach to his son. And one of them is to teach him an lamda umnis, teach him a trait, which simply means you got to make sure that he knows how to make a living. Shem malastim is sabrius, Rashi says, otherwise he's going to terrorize people, he's going to steal from people. So the Birchas Avram says, This concept, the Gemara in Chulin says that learning how to control your mouth is also a trait. That's also an obligation that a father has to teach his son. Not only to teach him a physical trait, but a spiritual trait of controlling his mouth. Because people have destroyed their own lives and opening their mouths too much and speaking too much. It's a responsibility that we have to impart. And really, the only way to do that is by example. And I say that with fear, because I don't know that definitely haven't lived up to it yet, but it's something a person learns verbal restraint. You see it. You see it from others, and you hear it. What our children hear us saying, you know, on the phone, what others hear us saying, you know, that sometimes we don't even realize, we don't even pay attention to. And it's an art. It's a trait. It's a lambda umnis. It's a trait of silence. And, again, but it's the koach of dibur, that a person does use their mouth. There's a famous song, might know from I think it was in the 70s, the first Jep album, a number of years ago, where they had a song about the chorus. The words were, for 6 million tears fell to the ground, the world stood still, didn't make a sound. It was the painful silence of the world. That's one of the things that comes out from the Milchama, Achman Islam, besides everything that happened. You know, that the world stood still. It wasn't just the Germans. It was I think now when President Obama was in Washington, was in Yad Vashem. So Rabbi Lau spoke, representing us. He spoke and he said to Mr. Obama that he met a soldier who, I'm trying to remember the exact details. I didn't prepare this, so I hope I remember it correctly. But it was something to this effect. He met a soldier who once told him. He said, I was one of the, I think it was a Russian soldier, who liberated Buchenwald. Everyone, I think it's well known, Rabbi Lau was the youngest survivor of Buchenwald. An 8-year-old child, that famous picture is of him. And he says, wow, that's amazing, thank you so much. He says, I have to apologize to you. Oh, it was an American soldier. He said, I have to apologize to you. He said, why in the world do you have to apologize to me? You liberated me. He said, because we could have gotten there sooner. We could have gotten there sooner. And Rabbi Lau turns to President Obama and he says, you should never have to say it. You said you're going to stand behind us and we appreciate that, but you should never come a day when you're going to have to say, we should have come sooner. We should have backed you up sooner. And that was one of the most painful things of the war, is that the world shut its doors. Our great friends in England and America, they all shut their doors. And FDR, we know that didn't come through. And it's a wise quote as well that Martin Luther King once said, that in the end, we're not going to remember the... We will not remember the words of our enemies, but the painful silence of our friends. And the koach of dibur, the power to give chizuk, is one of the greatest things that we have. In the Haggadah, we say, "Vayered Mitzrayim onus al pi adibur." Says that Yaakov Avinu went down to Mitzrayim. He was forced, which literally means honest. He was forced al pi adibur by the dibur of Hashem. And HaKadosh Baruch Hu told him to go down. He didn't want to go down. He wanted to stay in Eretz Yisrael. And HaKadosh Baruch Hu told him to go down. But the Plotzkin Magid said, "Shad is Vayered Mitzrayim onus." He was forced al pi hadibur because of dibur, because of misused dibur, because of his children, because the brothers spoke negatively about Yosef HaTzadik, and I'm sorry, the other way around, Yosef HaTzadik's lashon hara about them. Yared Mitzrayim onos al pi hadibur was because of dibur. That is what caused the whole gullus of Mitzrayim, was because of dibur. So it's learning that balance in what a person says and what a person should not say. I once heard a very interesting idea. The Rishon Rebbe, once told someone, he once told a guy even, that he said the Anani HaKavod, we know that the Anani HaKavod protected the Jews in the desert. He said, where did it come from? He said, it came from, you know, when a person speaks, there's vapor. Hevel. Hevel PM. He says sometimes that the world is sustained by Hevel PM, Shel Tinoko Shebis Rabba. The vapor, the words that are spoken by children when they learn Torah. So the Rishoner said that when there was Aaron HaKohen, we know that the Anani HaKavod came in Zchus Aaron, and what's the Shaisis? He said an amazing pshat. He said, Aaron brought Shalom. When there's Shalom, people stand closer to each other. They can deal with each other. They can come closer to each other. The Hevel is stronger. People speak closer. Not too close, you know. But there's the Hevel is stronger. He said the Hevel of Shalom, the speech between people in Klal Yisrael, that's what the Anani HaKavod came from. A wild idea. He said, that's what built the Anani HaKavod. It was from Hevel PM. And I was thinking about it on Sukkot, that we say, everybody knows we say Koheles, which is a Pele, the whole thing. Hevel HaVolim HaMar Koheles, HaKol HaVel, it's all nonsense, it's all futile, you know, and that's part of Zman Simchaseinu, which is something that has to be reconciled. But on the other hand, a little bit using this idea from the Rishoner, Hevel HaVolim HaMar Koheles, you know, that it's all Hevel, it's all our dibur, it's all our speech, what we say to each other, HaKol HaVel. I was thinking about it during Shachos this morning, it was on my mind. V'mechayim, we say in Olam HaYadam, in the beginning in Brachos, V'mechayim Hevel Afanecha, the days of our lives are Hevel. That's the power that we have. We wield the power of speech. Ki HaKol HaVel. It's all based on how we, on what we do with it, how we use it. There's Bilam ben Be'or Horgu B'Chorev. Ultimately, Bilam was one of our ultimate foes, one of our most dangerous enemies. They kill by the sword. So Rashi points out the irony, the ironic twist, that Bilam used, he was toe-face, he grabbed our umnus. He used the power of Dibor. That's ours. That's our koach. Our koach is Torah. Our koach is tefillah. Our koach is chizuk. And he used that power to curse us. He wanted to use it against us. So at the end of the day, he was killed with Esau's power, which is the Chorev. As Bilam ben Horgu B'Chorev, they killed with the sword because he was toe-face ours, so we were toe-face his. But that's... It's one of the definitions of a Jew, the Chofetz Chaim, who we all would imagine that the Chofetz Chaim never spoke. His person wrote Shmir Saloshin, you know, the Chofetz Chaim never spoke. And I think his father-in-law once said over that the Chofetz Chaim was a very loquacious individual. He spoke a lot. And that was his godless. And even though he was a talker, you don't have to be a person who never talks. He was a talker. He spoke a lot. And every word was measured. And every word was chizuk. And every word was gold. There's like hardly a day that the person doesn't quote the Chofetz Chaim in one way or another with the Mishnah Brura. I love it for the very beautiful story. I'm sure some people here might know it because it's a local story. I wrote it over once. But it's a beautiful story. Again, about the koach of chizuk and of respect and avas chinam. And January 6, 2011, the Gluck family here in the neighborhood, Mir Chasanov, the daughter Reina to Yaakov Chifetz. of Brooklyn, in, right here in our terrace, China. Excuse me. During Shabbos Sheva Brachos on Shabbos afternoon, I met mother, Mrs. Liz Gluck, the mother of the Kala, walking with her family. I told her about them. She said, "Stop! I got to tell you this story." She said, "During the 1970s, there was a young man named Shlomo. He was a Talmud at the Chaim Berlin, and his father, Chaim Berlin, was nifter, and he was a young man. And the mother could not; she couldn't afford to pay tuition, full tuition. So she made an agreement with the administrator of the yeshiva to help the yeshiva in any way she could. So she ran fundraisers, yeshiva dinner, all those things. And she would often tell her son, the mother would often tell Shlomo, that she was so touched by how the administrator treated her. He always, with such respect, and he never spoke her down, and he never made her feel like she had to do this. He always made her feel so good and so special about everything she did. He always smiled to her and made her feel so good. And it meant a lot to her. And Mrs. Gluck tells me, she says, "Shlomo is my husband, Shlomo Gluck. And this week our daughter married Yaakov Chafetz, who's the son of Rabbi Arye Leib Chafetz, who was the administrator of Chaim Berlin." She said, "When our daughter first began to date, and someone mentioned Yaakov as a shidduch for Reina, so the name resonated. We wondered if there was any connection. And we found out, so we decided to pursue the shidduch above all else. And Rabbi Chafetz could have never known that the widow, to whom he gave so much respect, was the grandmother of his future daughter-in-law." And a beautiful story of Avas Chinam. He didn't do it because it was going to be a future, future family member. He did it because, you know, a person who just has respect. But the more Marbe Shom and Marbe Reyes and Marbe Hevel amongst each other will slowly bring the Gula back. We know that Klal Yisrael comes to Har Sinai with Keshechad Belevechad, with incredible unity, and that's Shavuos. It's amazing. I once read that the Mordechai Schwab, before he would go to the Kosel, whenever he was in Eretz Yisrael, he did achanas. So we would all imagine, what was the achana that he did? Taking chatzos, and maybe he did those things too. But he would go to visit all of his non-religious relatives first. First he worked on Ben Adam HaChavero. That was before he went to the Kosel. You think, get off the plane, first thing you do, go to the Kosel, and you have an opportunity to be there. First he went to all his non-religious relatives, and he spoke to them, and he drew them close, and then he went to the Kosel. The hachana that we do, the yontif, it's amazing that the yontif of Shavuos is called Shavuos. Shavuos means weeks. That means that the yontif is totally in the hachana that we do beforehand. And the hachana beforehand is very much intertwined with our ben adam lachaveiro, with our working on our relationships with each other. And a group like this to meet for that chizuk, it's inspiring for me. And it's a mechayev for me. Now I spoke about Shmiras HaLoshen, and I can't talk Lashon Hara for at least a few days. It's definitely this is a group that helps to build that Kabbalah Satorah. And Be'ezer Hashem, we'll rebuild the Beis Hamikdash step by step, and we'll be zocha to be mekabel pnei Mashiach tzidkenu. Thank you very much for the opportunity.